This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. About 6 years ago, Lisa Jones was writing a book for her grandchildren about their family history. She was born and raised in Washington, North Carolina, and she knew that her family's roots went back for generations. But as she began to dig through the records and conduct research, she uncovered some surprising details. She found documentation of plantations that weren't listed at her local historical society, and many other facets of African-American history that weren't talked about in her hometown. Well, Lisa started a Facebook page called I'm from Washington, North Carolina, and Nobody Told Me About This. And that began her journey to educate herself and her community about their lost history. Lisa now leads African-American history tours and is about to open a new museum about the Underground Railroad's passage through Washington, North Carolina. Lisa joins me now on the State of Things. Lisa Jones, welcome. Good to have you here.
Good afternoon.
You found take us back to the beginning of this journey and tell us more about your initial quest to uncover some of the history that you wanted to pass on to your grandchildren.
Well, the genesis of how I got to where I am today was because I started writing a book for our family reunion. For my grandchildren, because I wanted them to know who their ancestors were. And I only had heard stories about my paternal grandparents. And so in trying to research them and where they came from, I discovered several generations that were on plantations right here in Bath, right here in Washington, North Carolina. And I did not know many of my ancestors had been on plantations. And so what happened, I started to look at the Washington Historical Society's literature about the plantations in and around the greater Washington area, and I found about six. And within 2 years of my research, I had found 137 plantations. And one of those plantations, about 30 miles from Washington, is where I found my great-great-grandmother, Molly. And that, in trying to find out how they lived and how they got here and the exodus from other places to Washington, I uncovered African-American history that was I would say, lost.
Yeah. Well, tell us how you did it, because it sounds like an amazing amount of work. I mean, as you said, these plantations weren't even noted in the local historical society. So for you to find out that there were these others and then find your own ancestors, how did you do it?
Well, I started looking in, like, the local libraries here in Washington, and apparently that's where the Washington Historical Society and the Beaufort County Historical Society had pretty much gleaned their information from. And so I started going to Duke University, the University of Chapel Hill, East Carolina University, and I started going into the private papers of some of the well-known prominent plantation owners in Washington. And that's when I discovered those wonderful golden nuggets of history that had been hidden for so long. And then to be able to actually place my ancestors on some of these plantations and then around the rich history in the area was absolutely mind-blowing.
Now, are you a trained historian?
No, I'm not.
Well,
you
are now.
I just love to read.
You are now.
I just love to read. Washington has a huge African-American community called Keysville, Keysville. My ancestors came from the Key, K-E-A, plantation in Bertie County, Maryhill, Coleraine, and so they migrated to Keysville. Well, in looking for my ancestors in and around the Keysville area, and by the way, the man that owned all that land, South B. Keys, he was one of the largest African-American landowners in Beaufort County. But in looking for my ancestors in Keysville, I discovered Keysville was very vital to the Underground Railroad here in Washington. And so one thing just kind of uncovered something else, and then something else would uncover something else. And that's how I found this wealth of history.
Then you started to tell these stories on your Facebook page and got quite a response. Tell us about the response.
Well, what happened was I would share what I was learning with friends and family. And they just would have this deer in the headlights look on their face, and they go, well, I'm from Washington, North Carolina, and nobody ever told me this. And so I began to hear that phrase so much. I developed a Facebook page called I'm from Washington, North Carolina, and nobody told me this. And it on that Facebook page, it has about 300 years of African-American history in Washington that I discovered. So that's how the page got its name.
And then you started getting a fair number of responses, right? What kind of response did you get?
People from all over the country, people from the military in other countries, they would contact me and go, well, can you look this up for me? And so what we started doing for people that were could get to the Washington area, we just started taking them out on walking tours up and down the historic district and up and down the Pamlico River, and I tell them where the slave market was, or I tell them where African-American shipbuilding industries were. And so that's how the tours developed.
Tell us what you learned about Washington, North Carolina's place in the Underground Railroad, because that had not been fully understood, if at all. Tell us what part it did play.
Well, it played a very, very vital part of the Underground Railroad. Washington at one time had about 27 shipbuilding industries. Not all at one time, but in the course of about 150 years, there were various shipbuilding industries on the river. And those ships went all over the world, Belgium, Holland, Sweden, England.
And we're talking about the Pamlico River, just to be clear.
The Pamlico Tar River.
There you go.
And so those shipping industries, they went all over the world. There were also lumber mills. I think it was like 17 lumber mills at one point here in Washington. There were two rice mills here in Washington. Washington was like the fourth largest producer of rice in North Carolina. And at one point, they'd bring African Americans in, some of them that came directly from the west coast of Africa, and others were brought from like Cuba, the West Indies. They were brought here to work in rice production. And because those ships went all over the world, abolitionists working very closely with plantations here in Washington, they somehow were able to get on those plantations. And because abolitionists believed that nobody had a right to enslave another person, they developed codes, they developed signals that would help would help enslaved people to get on the ships that were going out to New York, Boston, Philadelphia, Canada. William Steele, the father of the Underground Railroad and a great abolitionist, in his journals, he even chronicles the story of a man named Jacob Brown. He was owned by Lewis Brown of Tranter's Creek, right here in the Washington area. But William Steele tells of Jacob Brown's being able to get on a ship right on the Washington waterfront and go north. And because people were able to get on those ships and get to their freedom, that's why Washington was such an integral part of the Underground Railroad.
Another story that you uncovered was about a man named Big Bob, who you heard a lot about in your childhood. Tell us about Big Bob.
I remember the school bully chasing me home one day, and my grandmother seeing me run up on the porch, she said to me, you know, you got to learn to stand like Big Bob the slave martyr. And she never really told me the story of Big Bob, but I knew that Big Bob had to be somebody impressive because they'd always tell you, you got to learn to stand. And so it didn't exactly help me with the school bully, but it helped me to know that I really needed to take a stand at some point and stand for the things that were right. Many, many years later, in my reading, I came across the story of Big Bob, and I go, this is who my grandmother was telling me about. And Big Bob is my all-time all favorite inspirational story of an act of heroism right here on the Washington, the Pamlico River right here in Washington. And during the Civil War, there were so many acts of heroism here on the contraband slaves during the Civil War. I mean, there were six forts that were built here in Washington, and contraband slaves built every one of them. They were very important to the Union Army and, at some point, the Confederate Army. But what happened with Big Bob was he literally risked his life to save the lives of the men that were on the boat. And the story went, if we could say it now, the story went viral. It was in newspapers across the country. But here in eastern North Carolina, that story was never sufficiently told. It was somehow lost to history. But because of this man's heroism, that's why he's so inspirational to me.
And not only did you uncover the story, but you told the story to the Civil War in North Carolina, the Civil War History Center in North Carolina, which is set to open in 2020. We're going to find out more about that museum and about your story and how that contributed. But Lisa Jones, thank you so much for being with us today on The State of Things.
Thank you so much.
Lisa Jones is the director of the Washington Waterfront Underground Railroad History Museum, and that's about to open up in a caboose car in Washington, North Carolina. You can find out more about the museum and Lisa's efforts at our website, stateofthings.org. We'll talk more about Civil War history and the attempt to get stories like Lisa's from all over the state. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The story of the American Civil War is often told through famous battles and important generals, but that narrative doesn't accurately represent the story of the Civil War in North Carolina. We're going to talk today about the North Carolina Civil War History Center and their efforts to collect Civil War stories from each and every county in the state. The project aims to document diverse perspectives of how the war and Reconstruction played out on the home front. Joining me now is David Winslow, senior consultant at the North Carolina Civil War History Center. David, welcome. Good to have you here.
Great to be here.
Also joining me is Jim Lutze, Civil War historian and Chancellor Emeritus at UNC Wilmington. Welcome back, Jim. Good to have
you
as well.
Good to be with you.
David, tell us about this project. What is it?
Well, it's probably one of the largest public history projects in recent years in North Carolina. We have embarked on an effort to secure at least 100 family, Civil War, and Reconstruction stories from each of the state's 100 counties, which would net us about 10,000 stories in total.
Wow. So stories from not just one story from each county, not 100, but as many as you can get. 100 from each county. Then what are you going to do with the stories?
Well, they're going to be part of our database, part of what we're doing in terms of research and creating a foundation for the actual History Center itself.
Which is set to open in about 4 years?
Well, in 4 years, though, we hope to have we plan to have a virtual opening of the History Center in 2018.
Mm-hmm. And then what are the sort of the grand plans? You'll have stories. That's the foundation for research. If there's a building and brick and mortar, what's that going to look like?
Well, the stories are interesting from the perspective as, you know, you don't always know that stories are accurate. Yet they've been handed down generation to generation, and they can get embellished. But what's important for us is the memory portion of this thing, is how people remember that period of time. But in a lot of cases, we are, in fact, back-checking these stories to make sure, particularly when we intend to use them, that they are, in fact, accurate. But they become part of our story.
Well, Jim Lutze, I think one of the things we know about North Carolina in general is that it is a complicated and a rich history. Tell us about the story of North Carolina and its involvement in the Civil War.
Well, I've always said that North Carolina epitomized in microcosm the country, because North Carolina was split, just like the country was split, over the issue of secession and over the issues of states' rights and slavery, et cetera. And so the eastern part of North Carolina favored the war, the central part of the state probably 50-50, and the western part of the state opposed the war. North Carolina was very slow in order to make the decision to enter the war. It was a divisive thing for the state, and it continued to be divisive throughout the conflict. there was a newspaper in Raleigh that was a unionist newspaper that, that felt that we should not have seceded. And the governor of North Carolina had very mixed feelings. He felt that the Confederacy was, in a sense, worse than the federal government in that it kept accessing materials and other things from the state that the state wanted for itself. So it was very divided. And the stories that we were getting, and the stories I also want to say, after the war, I mean, we want to start in maybe 1850, looking at 1850 and up till approximately 1900. We want to put a human face on this. From after having taught history for 30 years, I know that students really can better identify with things when they can put a face on it. And I always went into biographical detail about the leaders or whoever was involved. So we're trying to put a face on this and of everybody, not just generals and not just soldiers, but on the women on the, that were left at home when their men went to the war or lost their husbands and the children and the slaves and the ex-slaves and what their life was like in that four-year period, but then what it was like after the war.
And it very much is a domestic story, unlike places, you know, like Virginia and famously Pennsylvania. The war wasn't fought so much on North Carolina territory, and therefore the story might be about the home front and what was happening here.
Well, actually, North Carolina was occupied before any other state. The eastern part of the state, the Outer Banks and right. so on, was occupied very early in the war. But and then it isn't until the end of the war. But as I indicated about Governor Vance and his animosity toward the Confederate government, North Carolina had to give a lot of their food products, a lot of their textiles, a lot of other things away. So they there were people in North Carolina starving at the end of the Civil War.
And it was a close vote, and the North Carolina was the last one in to join the Confederacy.
That is right. And in the 1861 election, Lincoln was not on the ballot. That 1860 election, Lincoln was not on the ballot. But the two candidates that favored staying with the Union lost by less than 2,000 votes.
David, is this you're collecting stories already, and I'm wondering if this kind of the sharp divide is showing up in the narratives that you have already.
Yeah, we've been quite amazed at the variety of stories, and it often depend upon where you are. For example, we're getting some really interesting stories out of Randolph County. Randolph County, when the secession vote came in March of 1861, 98% of the citizens in Randolph County voted to stay in the Union. And they actually had a shadow government in Randolph County, a Union shadow government throughout the war, from what I understand. And so we're getting a very rich tapestry of stories that reflect, you know, those realities.
Joining me now is Ira David Wood. He's an actor, a director, and a playwright who's here today to actually read some of the Civil War stories and Reconstruction stories that have been submitted so far to the History Center. David, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So do you have a narrative, I think one called Going Home to Die No More?
That's right. My great-great-grandfather, Joseph Joe Honeycutt, was born about 1823 in Stanley County's Almond Township. He was a family man, farmer, and cobbler who, owing to his ability to make shoes for the Confederate Army, avoided service for most of the war. In late 1864, however, by one account as a result of his Unionist sentiments, he was pressed into the 7th North Carolina Regiment and sent to Petersburg. A short time later, Joe, his friend D.M. Furr, and another man decided to return home. Joe relates the outcome in a letter to his wife dated March 3, 1865. I have to state to you the sad news that tomorrow at 12 o'clock I have to die. I have to be shot to death for starting home to see my wife and children and was arrested and court-martialed and am to be shot at 12 o'clock. Me and D.M. Furr have to die, but thanks be to God I'm not afraid. He asks his wife Nancy not to grieve and to raise his children in the way that they should go. He tells his son Julius to be a good boy and try to serve God and make a good man. And he has a similar sentiment for his son Ephraim. He bids farewell to his daughter Rebecca, urging her to be a good girl and go to preaching. To son Joe, he says, be a smart boy and mind your mother. He gives his shop tools to Julius and Ephraim to remember him by, and for Rebecca, a little looking glass. I want her to remember me. He gives Joel a little book that has some pretty lines. He asks Nancy to send them children to school and tells her, I can't write like this if I wasn't in trouble. I don't mind death like I do to leave my family, for I have to suffer so much here that I don't fear death. I don't want you to grieve for me, for I feel like I am going home to die no more.
Actor Ira David Wood reading one of the Civil War stories submitted to an ongoing collection effort by the North Carolina Civil War History Center. I'm here with the center's senior consultant and Civil War historian, Jim Lutze, and David Winslow is the senior consultant. David, I mean, what an incredible story. Is this something that wouldn't have been anywhere, that was not in any other archive until you asked for these stories?
We have not found them anywhere. Wow. I would imagine that the Wilson Library probably has some of these stories. Now, that story itself was submitted by Ross Holt, who heads the Randolph Library System in Randolph County. And I think you there get an indication, again, of the complexities. There his great-great-grandfather was a Unionist sympathizer and, certainly came to a very tragic end.
Right. Well, and Jim, obviously a huge contingent of abolitionists in the form largely of the Quakers who had come, mostly settling in Guilford County, and that complicated the picture. And as you said, in Western North Carolina, not much sympathy at all for this. And again, in Eastern North Carolina, did it break down regionally pretty neatly, or were there a lot of division within those regions?
I think there was division within the regions. It's easiest to categorize it that way, east, west, and central, as the centers in which there was this kind of sentiment. But I think that there probably were unions. Here in the Piedmont, you have a man named William Holden, who later became governor of North Carolina, and he was a Unionist. He believed in the Union, and after the war, he was made governor of North Carolina, and then he was impeached when the government reasserted itself. That is, when the Union, secessionist government reasserted itself, they got rid of William Holden and impeached him. And his impeachment was not overturned until a few years ago. He was one of the few governors in this country that were impeached, and he was impeached because of his sentiments.
I've always been curious why the Union didn't do what it did in Virginia, which is to break off the western part of the state and declare it West North Carolina, the way they made West Virginia, because of its own. Do we know? Harder to manage that because they were farther south or something.
I think it probably would have been a little bit more complicated for them to do that. But it was a different state. They drove Union recruiters for the, right. Confederate recruiters out of the state. And so they knew they couldn't recruit in the western part of the state. So one of the things that intrigues me is I think North Carolinians know so little about their history, but they also know so little, particularly about this period that we call Reconstruction, and which even the terminology, what does Reconstruction really mean? Does it mean reconstructing the Union? Does it mean reconstructing the South as it used to be? In North Carolina, it was reconstructing the South as it used to be, and they accomplished that by 1871. 5 years after the war, North Carolina was in denial about what was going on federally and took a states' rights position that they did not have to obey the Constitution of the United States, and they got away with that.
Such vehemence for a state that was ambivalent about about participating in the Confederacy. But again, it was a kind of a states' right issue. I mean, the way you you put it, it was almost a states' rights issue that nearly kept them out of the Confederacy. We don't want a big government telling us what to do.
Exactly. So there are all kinds of confusion about this and about what the terms and what happened during this period. But most people, we will cover a portion of Reconstruction, or what we call Reconstruction, up until maybe 1898 or so. But
well, David, you have a narrative about a man named William and his wife Ann Maria that touches a bit on Reconstruction. Will you share that one with us?
During the Civil War, Ann Maria and her husband lived at the Margaret Croom place at Moss Hill in Lenoir County. Once, when the Yankees came through the area, Ann Maria was fixing supper, and one of the Yankees invited himself to eat with him. He sat beside her son Joe and told him, "I have a boy just about your age back home." Ann Maria begged the Yankees not to steal all her chickens, etc. It's not recorded whether her plea did any good. Ann Maria was born in April 19, 1842 and died March 18, 1919. Her husband, William Allen Bill Croom, was in the Home Guard early in the war but hired a black man to take his place in the Army and didn't serve. He seems to have been a draft dodger later. He is said to have hidden out in the swamp. Stories are told of patrollers telling his wife they'd shoot him if they caught him. Bill seems to have been a Union man. He was a Republican after the war, running for county commissioner on the Republican ticket. He was born October 8, 1837, and died November 24, 1899. This was submitted by William Everett Mickey Cole.
That was actor Ira David Wood reading one of the Civil War stories submitted to an ongoing collection effort by the North Carolina Civil War History Center. I'm here with the center's senior consultant David Winslow and Civil War historian Jim Luzzi. How are you getting these? Are these all written up, sent in to you via email? Are you doing any oral histories?
No, we're doing this by a variety of means. First of all, we are set up online, nccivilwarcenter.org. You go to that site and you can submit your story right online. And we ask that you just tell us what county you're from when you do that. We also have 10 graduate history or graduate students from Western Carolina all the way to UNC Wilmington and all the schools in between, who are, in fact, out there as we speak, collecting stories. They are contacting local genealogical societies, historical associations, sons of the Confederate veterans, the daughters of the Confederacy, everyone they can possibly find to get stories in their counties that surround their schools.
Now, look, the Civil War is about as divisive and controversial today as it was over a century ago. What about that, and how are you going to navigate the controversies over how these stories get told and what's the balance and how many voices are heard?
Great question. You know, I often describe the Civil War as the greatest train wreck in the history of America. And depending upon where you look at that train wreck, it can look very, very different. And in fact, you can even have the same set of facts and come to very different conclusions. And what we are about at the History Center is presenting those facts, but we are trying not to tell people how to think. We let them think for themselves. But what we are about is presenting the facts and this rich tapestry of stories, I think, that help to give some nuance. And that's what a lot about we're about, too, is that a lot of people see the Civil War in black and white, blue and gray, North and South terms. It's a much more nuanced story than that. You know, North Carolina was a purple state then. As we see, and it's a purple state today, we're a lot alike.
Well, Jim Luzzi, I mean, that's another story, is that we think of the Civil War as history, but it's a history that hasn't left us, and we see a lot of elements in the debate, and again, in the state itself, reflected today that were abroad in the 1860s and 70s.
Well, I like saying that the Civil War was both about the issue of slavery, and it was also about the issue of states' rights, and people will debate forever which was the primary one. That need not detain us here, and simply say the issue of slavery was settled, the issue of states' rights was not settled. And there are many states today, particularly in the southern and western part of the country, that still practice nullification. Mitch McConnell has said that the states should not obey the federal clean air laws, which is nullification. And when a state stands up and says they are not going to do or follow whatever the federal government says, and the widespread hatred of, quote, the federal government, which is animating this election campaign, in which all the candidates agree, what they agree on is they hate the federal government, that's a Civil War-type sentiment. And also, there are other ways in which people express this sense of superiority of the local over the national government. It hasn't gone away.
Well, so it is still relevant as part of it. It's not just for Civil War buffs. And David, I want to ask you if this is going to be, is this a virtual project, online project only, or does it become brick and mortar? What does it look like when it's complete?
Well, we, in putting together the plans for this History Center, did something a little bit different. We actually commissioned a digital master plan, first of a new museum in the United States that we know about. And it calls for us to go online, not just online, but also through distance learning, et cetera, by 2018. And it, by that point, we hope to be, in essence, reaching out to classrooms in all 100 counties, particularly focusing on the 4th, 7th, and 11th grade students who are all studying North Carolina history.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. David Winslow, a senior consultant for the North Carolina Civil War History Center. Jim Lutze, a Civil War historian and Chancellor Emeritus at UNC Wilmington. And Ira David Wood, a playwright, an actor, and a director. Thank all of you for being on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find out more about the North Carolina Civil War History Center and how to submit your own Civil War story at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, what is the science of politics? How about the politics of science? Does fact-checking matter? We'll talk about it in a moment on The State of Things. Please stay tuned.